right. Good evening, everyone. This is class 5 of 6 of Establishing a Daily Practice. So we have one more next week, and then we will have a 2-week break. So the last 2 Mondays of February, gosh, I almost forgot what month it was. The last 2 Mondays of February, we won't be meeting here for Discovering Buddhism. So there are other things to do, so have no fear. On Wednesday nights, you can join Geshe-la for Lam Rim topics, which you've been mentioning Lam Rim a lot, so that might be worthwhile. Wednesday nights from 7 to 8:30. And then also on Saturday, February 15th, there is a Tara practice from 1 to 3. Anyone and everyone is welcome. It's a really beautiful practice if you haven't done it before, previously. You do 21 Tara mantras, and it's just it's absolutely beautiful. Completion forms I'll have next week, and you can take those with you, turn them in at any point in time later on. You can find me and give them to me if for some reason you're here and I'm not. Back in the back cabinet back there, the top left cabinet, you can put them on. There's a little shelf. There's a tiny little sticker on the shelf that says DB for Discovering Buddhism. Just stick it there, and I'll be sure to get it to the right person. Please don't hand it to the teacher directly, because I do need to make a copy and keep record of it. So I will get it to the teacher. And don't forget, all the materials are online, including, you know, the readings, the homework, the completion card. If you are home streaming tonight and you want to do the completion card, everything will be online. The completion card's not there yet, but it will be. So be sure to check that out online. And if you are new and you haven't picked up this handout, this is the original one from our first day of class. It has all the information and how to find those things online. So just let me know. I didn't put the table up outside the doors tonight, but I've got some other copies. Okay, I think that's it. Don't forget to silence cell phones and enjoy.
So before we get going, this is your 5th class of Establishing the Daily Practice. Okay, any questions you may have had? Or if you want to share any experiences, has anybody started actually practicing, or somebody has advanced further, any experiences, I'm curious to know. Sure, Karen. Okay, no such thing.
That's a dumb question. So when you do offerings, after you've made your offering, you put the thing on whatever it is, on the altar, and you've blessed it, and, you know, done the Om Ahum and all that, then, like, what do you do with it? So I understand that if it's water, you can give it to a plant. That's a good thing to do with it. I understand if it's food, you can eat it. What about flowers? What do you do with it?
You could put it in your garden.
Like dead flowers?
Yeah, you can just put it in the garden or something like that, yeah. Or if you have a little stream or something like that, or just collect it, or however. Just more respect, because you're really offering to your absolute nature of mind. So you don't want to create a mindset of, oh, I just don't need it. It's just the state quality of your mind is more important. You know, you're offering it with love. You want to also kind of, you know, put it out there somewhere. Sure, absolutely. Nothing wrong with it.
Well, along those same lines, is it okay to put it in your compost bin?
Sure, you can do
okay.
It.
Okay.
You can.
Okay. Okay.
You do a small mantra. You've offered it. It's done its job. Thank you. You know, wish we have more flowers. And then, but the quality of mind of what you do with it is more important than you set the tone. You can give somebody water nicely, or you can say, here, give me a glass here. There you go. A little different, right? That's the mindset. It's all about developing your own quality in mind. So it's okay. Perfectly fine. Any other questions? Any questions on what we've gone through, why, and all of this? We'll go through this today. We're getting to the end of it. My goal in this class was the very first day we talked about, so I've learned this, I've been to classes, I go to Geshe-la's class, I go to on Sundays. What do I do with this stuff? Where do I begin? Is that this ABCD, 1, 2, 3, 4? Do we have some sort of a flow? Not all these questions come up in your mind, or eagerness to do something. Wonderful thoughts, right? But that's the whole purpose of Establishing the Daily Practice, was twofold. and we'll go a little further into it. But one was to give you some tools that's already created by our lineage teachers. But number two, the whole idea behind us, this, and I'll be asking this question again in the middle of it somewhere, is to develop our own mind, our own Buddha nature. Right? That's the whole idea. Right? So it's important that you establish some practice. I even give you some analogy. If you wanted to start a diet or you wanted to play tennis, you can't expect to go on the thing and know it all and score an ace. Right? It takes a little time. And I continuously mention this, don't constrict yourself. It first comes like overwhelming information, new words, new things, new thought patterns. It's sometimes almost like, oh my gosh, do I really need this stuff? That's what happens in our mind, because our mind is not used to it. And our whole purpose of this is to change that mind. And the question will come up, why? Right? The idea is, I've been doing something very comfortable, I'm very happy with my routine, and all of a sudden, this guy comes and sits here and says, you gotta change all that. And this is how you do it, you gotta know it all, right? That's not what we are doing. We are giving you some tools. And the right tools used in the right way makes the job easier. And the purpose of it is to have you go through your own practice, your own setup. And there are some very nice little prerequisites that help you along the way. And then you develop that so that you can go on your journey, and ultimate goal is for you to become Buddha. That's the most wonderful thing I know, I can tell you. If you can sometimes just question yourself, and I'll give you the definition today. So what is Buddha? We always say these things. I want to become Buddha. Clear mind. It's wonderful. Permanent happiness. We don't even know how to question it correctly, because we don't know how to fathom it. We can only go by little experiences we have of temporary happinesses and say, oh, it must be fun. Oh, it can't be that way. And you should not feel like this dogma coming at you and saying, you can't. You couldn't. You got to question it and then see how you can make yourself in a better place. And so it's actually freeing. In the beginning, obviously, like tennis, you go and play for 2 hours, next day don't expect not to have a little ache in your arm. Right? So same thing with your mind. You are telling yourself, I've been doing this for eons. Not just this life, not last 5 hours, many lifetimes. And all of a sudden, I have this opportunity to do something with it, and I'm going to twist my mind. I'm going to learn the right way. What does my teacher say? What does Lama Rim say? What did Lama Tsongkhapa say? So think in those ways, and then put it into action slowly. So today you play tennis for 1 hour maybe. You balls go all over the place. Next day you pick up a book. You learn a little bit about it. Ask somebody. Even hire a teacher. You start to serve a little better. Then a little later you watch a couple of tournaments and you kind of get the gist of it, how they count. Now you feel like you know what the tennis game is all about, and then you improve. Same way, kind of follow the same logic. When you're learning Dharma, you know, you are here, you're very lucky of us all that you're even here. Something is driving us inside, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. What brings you even here? Right? Go ahead.
I was going to just say, one of the things I've actually learned from this is by setting up my altar.
Wonderful.
I now know why it's set up the way it is. It just came to me very quickly, because it's refuge is what the altar is. It's the Dharma, the Buddha, and the Sangha.
Right.
Right there. So every time I go by it now, that's the first thing that immediately pops into my head. Because there it is visually, right there in front of me.
Wonderful. That's wonderful. That's very good to know. Absolutely. Everything is done with a reason. And when our Rinpoches and teachers tell you this is a traditional way, there's a lot of thought that has gone into it. It's all about helping you. Right? So, thank you for that. So with that, let's bring ourselves and the partner here to Kadampa Center. So we'll do a little meditation, calm abiding, and then we'll do our motivation, okay? And we're going to go this way. Okay, begin by making sure the spine is straight, the body and mind relaxed. Take a deep, few deep breaths in and out. And then breathe very naturally in a relaxed way. And then just count your inhalations 1 to 10 in your mind. Now allow yourself to be completely present for this time, this teaching, recognizing that usually our lives are filled with busy activities, simply concerned with survival or the short-term comfort and happiness of this life. Of 24 hours, usually one-third of that time is spent working. A third of that time is spent sleeping. And the remaining time is usually spent doing things like shopping for supplies, food, clothing, preparing, eating or cleaning up after food, washing or various other busy activities. Obviously also included is social engagement, movies, magazines and so forth. The percentage of our entire life that we actually spend in spiritual practice, making concerted effort, is very, very small. Yet, we have great wishes for what we'd like to accomplish in that arena. So, make the determination that, since the time that I spend in my spiritual life is very small, and usually somewhat distracted, I'll make the best effort I can to listen to these teachings carefully and try to put them into practice to the best of my ability. Why? Because I don't want to suffer. I want to experience happiness. I have some suspicion that there is a greater happiness available, a longer-lasting happiness that I could attain. I have some suspicion that I could develop greater wisdom, greater compassion, greater ability to help others. And if I check in my heart, that's what I wish to do. I'm tired of seeing suffering in the world. I'm tired of seeing wars, tired of seeing the environment degrade year by year. I'm tired of seeing people fighting, worn out, aging, and sick. And I want to do something to stop all of this. There must be another way. The Buddha's claim is that we found another way. He identified suffering. He identified the causes. He achieved the end of suffering. And then he revealed the path. I wish to follow the same path, attain that same state, and then reveal that method to others. So invite to this place our teachers and our guides of this life. Those who are carrying the lineage of these precious teachings to this present day. Ask them to abide with us and bless our minds for this time as we listen to these teachings on behalf of all living beings. Thank you. When you do these motivations, it's amazing. If you slow down and think about some of these motivations, it makes you think. It makes you think, why am I doing this? It's very important, okay, to set the motivation. So let's start with some, so far have you liked the way I go through definitions, a little summary, and then catch up? My goal is to link things. I like when people can, sometimes we go away for 4 or 5 days, some things go away. And I learned this from Geshe-la actually. Geshe-la sometimes repeats the same thing, and I found like about the third or fourth time it's like, oh my goodness, that's what he meant. You know, you think the first time you got it, right? And then you realize he's got a whole other meaning behind it, or some connection, or it's important that you hear it several times before you take it seriously. Right, so it's important. So I think definitions are very important. I find myself even preparing for the class that I read something and then I stop. What does that mean? What do they mean by that? Then I start looking and I go to Pabongka Rinpoche book, I go to Lamrim Tenmo, I look at Google, I look at Lama Yeshe archive, I go all of these places and then I find the meaning. Then I put it back and I read it again and ooh, it makes sense now. Then it stays with you because you made some effort. So some of these meanings are important. Okay, so let's talk about some of these things. So I'm gonna walk you through a couple of these meanings. Okay, we always talk about the omniscient mind, right, of Buddha. So omniscient means having infinite knowledge, knows it all, all knowing. We can't fathom that. Our mind wants to know. It's always learning, right? Speaking on things. Why is it this way? Why is that way? All this. So just imagine a pure mind that knows all. That's amazing. And then we say the word, he's omnipotent, having unlimited power. It's also similar to, or synergistic to, having lots of compassion. Power with compassion, wanting to benefit others. That's its nature. That's how the nature of Buddha is. Okay, so those words are important. You'll see that in the readings, right? Omniscient mind, omnipotent mind, and you think, okay, it's something powerful. But you've got to know the meaning of it, so it's important, I thought. You'll also hear today, during the talk, words like, may I attain the three types of morality? So we never think about it. We think, oh, moral, something good. Okay? But three types of morality. And so I think it's important to know the three aspects of the perfection of moralities are the morality of restraining from wrongdoing. You kind of get that one. The morality of accumulating merit. Virtuous mind, merit, right? And morality of benefiting sentient beings. Those are the three types of morality. I think you've already seen the root guru. But I did want to bring Guru Yoga. Everybody is familiar with those who have taken refuge to do Guru Yoga, or it's a Lamrim requirement that every day, part of your daily practice, you should do some Guru devotion. We'll talk about that a little bit, but it's important to know what Guru Yoga is. So in order to amass the two collections, I'll go through that again. What is the two collections? Of merit and purify negativities and obscurations. One views the guru as inseparable from a deity and or from Buddha. It's a development of your mind where you see your guide, your teacher, as same as Buddha. Mudra, we already talked about it. There are different gestures. They'll say he's seated in 9 mudra, he's standing in 6 mudras, or when you see Buddha sitting with his hand this way, or hand down, earth mudra, teaching mudra. These are just gestures. Symbolic of something. So the word mudra is important. Today, we come to Kadampa Center. Kadampa is a lineage teaching. Our Kadampa, we come from a Kadampa lineage. So it's important to know what Kadampa stands for. The word ka It's like the word or the teachings. Dham stands for instructions. And from what I read, pa means a person. And it started by Lama Atisha and his forward disciple, I think Dhrumpupta or something his name, I don't remember exactly the way he pronounced. But anyways, he was the one who established this, and Lama Tsongkhapa continued with this lineage. And it was really, this lineage is not only instructions that were so powerful, but also the practice of the instructions goes with it. So we come from that lineage. So I think it's important to know the meaning of Kadampa. Okay. You already went through this. One should become the whole point of a glance meditation. It doesn't mean you have to go in a prayer book and read it. The point of a glance meditation is once you understand what Lamrim is all about, it's a step-by-step way to become, to reach Buddhahood. All the instructions are arranged according to the capacity of the person in three scopes. And so when you learn, go through Lamrim, it is wonderful to know where you are at. Right? When we drive somewhere, don't we stop and say, oh, we are by Baltimore now. Oh, I'm in Maryland now. Right? We do that, right? Same way. When you're going through this journey, you may want to take a pause and saying, okay, here's all the teachings. Where am I? So it's always good. Not only that, it also gives you familiarity with the Lamrim topics. So then you have a little glance of what Lamrim is all about. You know what you're working on, and it gives you a really nice step-by-step way of moving forward. So glance meditation, okay? We already know Lamrim. We know the two major, at least Lamrim Chenmo, the treatise to the stages of the path by Lama Tsongkhapa. Okay. Also, you know the liberation in palm of your hand. It goes in hand with Lamrim there. And Atisha, I always say, is behind the screen here. But when the screen goes away, he is our lineage teacher. If you can give it a starting point, there were pundits who give a lot of instructions on emptiness and schools and stuff. But if you were to really look at the lineage of teaching, it's Atisha is our 11th century master that we kind of have the lineage from. So I think you should become familiar with, you know, when you get a chance and you're trying to read a book, try to find out who the author is. Try to find out where did this come from. Who are these people? What am I following? And when you learn who they were and what, how accomplished they were and what they did, you'll have a whole other way of looking at these things. You'll be very appreciative of what you have. So easily available to you. We already talked about Dorje. Okay, I would like to emphasize the three principal aspects of the path in case you've forgotten. Presenting the path, if you've taken the module, we talk about this. Part of the Lamrim, the first one is you have to understand renunciation. You're, again, in short, you're not running from your home or your size of the home. You're not giving up things if you're not clinging on to it. You're also renunciating from samsara. You don't want this cyclic birth, death, sickness, old age all the time. You want to be free of it. You want to become a Buddha, so you renunciate. It comes with the knowledge of how reality is, which is emptiness. And also the most and greatest piece of that is developing bodhicitta. These three things, combination, is the principal aspects of the path, main ones. And there are, of course, modules that will cover these. If you haven't taken the presenting the path, that will cover it. We have a whole thing on bodhicitta and emptiness and all that, so you'll get a lot of dosage on this, okay? You hear the word, oh, you want to do tara sadhana. Or sometimes you hear the word sadhana, which is wrong pronunciation, but sadhana, okay? So it's a method of accomplishing the step-by-step instruction and practicing meditation. So these are just practices. Okay? So we talked about the two accumulations or the two collections not too long ago. So the two accumulations, also called the two collections, or the two types of merits. They are the merit of virtue, which develops the method side. So what is the method side? When you talk about the six perfections, developing generosity, having morality, having patience, having enthusiastic perseverance or joyful effort, developing concentration, and ultimately realizing wisdom of emptiness directly. Those are the things. Please.
How is that different than wisdom and compassion?
Same. So when I say wisdom, they talk in two accumulations. There's also some times they talk to the two wings of wisdom and compassion. You need both. But when you also look at two wings, they also talk about wisdom, which is the emptiness side, knowing the reality, and the method, or what we do to become a bodhisattva. So this also goes hand in hand, and compassion is part of that. Okay? Generosity, morality, but back of them you're developing bodhicitta. Right? So it is confusing sometimes. I had to look at it about two or three times, but they're used in different way. One calls it wisdom and method, the other one calls it wisdom and compassion. You need both. So just know that. Okay? And then the other one is obviously we just talked about wisdom, which is the knowing the reality, how the reality exists, ultimate reality, how things exist. Then we talk about merits. Okay, these are positive imprints that you create with virtuous thoughts. So every time you do offering, every time you do something for your teacher, or you're creating good mind. Think of that as merits. Positive energy. Right? There's bad energy and good energy. No, question. Sandra, what? Any question? Nutta, ask me. No, okay. But these words are important, right? We say merit. We are typically, in high school we get merits or demerits. In military we get merits and demerits. So we kind of confuse these things. The same thing happens with the word emptiness. The same thing happens with the word suffering. It is not exact translation. Right? We think of suffering means, oh my God, gloom and doom. Right? But then they go further, like every Tibetan text is, three types of suffering, all these types of, you know, even suffering of change, right? They actually define it. So just in general, you know, merit is positive energy, virtuous thoughts, doing good things. Okay, I'm going to introduce to another thing, and you can look it up and study a little more. Sometimes you'll see the word, the Dharmakaya, the Nirmanakaya. They'll use these big words. Don't get confused. You can see Buddha in a couple of ways in your mind. When you see a in the absolute nature, take the deity out of it right now for a change, and just see the most clear mind, the most absolute nature of clear mind. That is the Buddha nature. Right? And then you give it a little form or some sort of a form to recognize that. That would be a Dharmakaya. If you look at somebody like Lama Rosopa Rinpoche, teachers like holiness, we call him that, he's a Chenrezig, his holiness is Avalokiteshvara, right? So that is called Nirmanakaya. So what happens is Buddha manifests, remember, with his power of omnipotent power, through teachers like that, so that you can talk with, so they can teach you. So when they manifest on this earth in those forms, they are called Nirmanakaya. So these are just words. Don't worry. These are mental forms to think about. When you think about Buddha in its purest form, sometimes you see the word Vajradhara. I'm not going to confuse you here. Don't get too lost into these things. Just know that there are ways you visualize Buddha in its most highest form, Dharmakaya. Then there is what they call a leisurely form, like, you know, the most opulent, beautiful, sitting on a throne. We do that in our mind for training. That is a different, that's called Sambhogakaya. And when you see the teacher walk here in this form, in the earth form, or in talking to you or teaching you, Nirmanakaya. So there's a manifestations of Buddha mind in different versions. That's all you need to know. But they use that in meditation. May I see Dharmakaya? And you say, what am I seeing? So I wanted to make sure you understand. So it says one of the three bodies of Buddha in Mahayana Buddhism, the Dharmakaya constitutes the unmanifest, the most primordial, inconceivable aspect of Buddha out of which Buddhas arise and to which they return after their dissolution. When they go, when the work is done, they go back to their Buddha nature, right? Buddhahood. So it's just a way to think. But it's something you should look it up. Okay? You should do a little pondering and find out what is this? Why? And where does it come from? Look it up. It's not that complex. You know, we see people sitting here. I can also see Sandra and Alex thinking in my home. I wonder what they're doing. That's another way of looking at you. Right? So it's just the way we visualize. Okay? I think you should get familiar with some vows. You hear all these words, right? May I take my pratimoksha vows, and may I take my bodhisattva vows. So you start thinking, then what are the lay vows, and what is the pratimoksha vow, and what is the tantric vow, and what are the vows? Right? I thought it was important to at least put them down, so that at least you have a basic understanding of those vows. So vows are precepts, a commitment you take. I will not kill. I will not steal. Right? You give yourself that permission and commit to it. That's a vow. But now, okay, let's think about the five lay vows. We talked about that, right? We already know no killing, no stealing, no sexual misconduct. You know all those vows. When you take refuge, you take these lay vows. And pratimoksha vows are at various levels. They include the lay vows, but also vows for some nuns and venerables and other ordained people. The basic level. And there are many levels of that. Depending on your advancement, you can get many vows. Then there are bodhisattva vows, and you can study about it. I have a whole book on it, on bodhisattva vows. And you'll learn that there are 18 root vows, 49 branch vows. You can just see how disciplined and so directive they are. They are. This is amazing. Okay? And then, of course, when you get tantra, your teacher or will give you tantric vows so that you may follow the integration practices. And then, of course, we have precepts we take, right, for a day or two, right? So those, at least be familiar with them. It's nothing that you have to memorize or anything like that. But if somebody were to say, oh, I'm taking lay vows, at least know what they are. Or somebody's talking about, oh, Samantabhadra, when he was taking bodhisattva vows, or some story you read, and you wonder, like, what vows did I take and what was that vow? So not to create confusion, but there are different vows and different levels of vows. Be familiar with them. Nothing complex. So here comes a big one I like. This was in my presenting the path. I put this some thought to this. And I did take a lot of this from Venerable Robina's teachings. A lot of these teachings that we give in these modules, some teacher, some venerable, some very advanced student that Lama Zopa Rinpoche has sanctioned. These are very highly attained students or venerables or teachers that develop modules. What is the most important for you to learn? And then you take it from there. And I took this from one of the teachings, and I thought that was fantastic. We always talk about wanting to become a Buddha. That's your journey, right? You are sitting here today that one day you will ultimately reach that goal. So it's important to know what is that goal. Okay? So think about it. A fully developed person in the wisdom wing, knowing all the emptiness, omniscience, accurate cognition. In Tibetan, they don't have the word omniscience and all-knowing. They have a real finite, laser-like word, accurate cognition. Knows things accurately. Literally, you can surmise, literally all-knowing, to see perfectly the minds of others, seeing things as they are. So that's the Buddha's mind, or Buddha nature's mind. Now, it's also a fully developed person in the compassion wing. The word omnipotent. Infinite power, the effortless ability to do whatever needs to be done, has infinite compassion. So all-knowing and infinite compassion and able to do anything. So now look at this, the last, put it together. A wisdom that knows exactly what and how, where and what, and who, with the capacity to do what needs to be done to perfectly benefit all beings, all-knowing, all-compassionate, all-wise, all-pervading. Question?
So, how many people, I mean, I know you don't have a number.
We have streamers.
So, okay.
How many people are actually enlightened, who are walking this earth? Like, is it hundreds of thousands or two or what?
Maybe. I don't know. But there are thousands of Buddhas. They say millions of Buddhas. Millions of Buddhas.
On the earth, walking to
wherever, in the universe. I don't know on the earth specifically, but there are enlightened beings.
And
but I don't know.
How do we know, like, is the Dalai Lama enlightened?
Maybe he is.
We don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Unless you have a relationship with him or something, I would not know that. I don't personally know that.
So
but I would say,
said like the Dalai Lama.
I would say he's a if you call him Chenrezig, Nirmanakaya of Chenrezig, to me, he would be an enlightened being for me.
Right.
Okay. So I think the whole idea here is, I'm not going to know the statistics of that, but I know that we have the capacity to be one. That is the important part here.
I was just curious, like, how common is it that people actually achieve it in this?
You wouldn't even know. There could be other things that are enlightened. You always think in terms of human beings.
Oh.
They can manifest in any shape or form. Think about this. Capacity to do what needs to be done to perfectly benefit all beings. Doesn't matter what it is. If it helps somebody, they can manifest. So, could be many walking around all over the place. But that's the whole goal. But isn't that a great... Now you can put your mind to rest. That if my ultimate nature is that, I can be one. That's the power of this. It is actually joyful. Because we study a lot of things, suffering. Right? Now put yourself... You need to know that in order to understand that. That's the connection we have to make in this. And that's what makes this beautiful. Okay. Right. Very quickly, I'm not going to waste a lot of time. We've already gone through all of these things several times. And so, for those who may have missed, you should be familiar with why we need to practice, how to incorporate Dharma, how to soak it into your mind. We talked about morning practices, mantras to recite, evening practices. In class two, we talked about Lam Rim Chenmo, and we talked about the stages to the path. We talked about the six preparatory practices, okay, and we should know them. So if you're taking the class, I will go through these questions later on. I think you should be able to answer every one of them if you're taking the class, because we've covered it several times. And so we'll go through it, actually. Okay, so you should, if somebody says to you, what are the preparatory practices, you should be thinking twice at this point. You should either, if you're seriously thinking about it, you should know them. Okay, it should become, after a while, you go to your dampa or a little picture of a deity or your teacher, do a little cleaning, do a nice offerings, multiply it, you know, then you get prepared to sit on your cushion to do your regular practice, and then you go through your seven limbs. No, first you sit down, develop your bodhicitta, right? Take refuge, bodhicitta, and then you prepare for a meditation, then you start to do your seven limb prayers, and right, you offer the mandala and all that, and then you finish it off with making requests, so forth. I mean, just going down the line, you should be able to do that. And then we talked about a lot of what Rinpoche, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, has asked us to think about the preliminary prayers. We went through the prayer book at one point, showed you where they are in the morning, how you multiply your mantras, how you can multiply the benefits of doing mantra on your malas, you know, speech, how to purify your speech, right? Then taking the refuge, also setting bodhicitta. So you know those prayers are there. You just kind of got to know it. And in all of this, you know, first it may be just memorization or maybe just reading the words, but think of the quality of your mind, what you're trying to do. You're blessing your mind. You're blessing you're creating an environment of developing this pure mind so that these teachings can come to you. Right? It's a beautiful way. Right? And not to lose the scope that if you want to become Buddha, you need to have bodhicitta. So you may not have it on that day. You know, you are thinking already like, I can't even like this guy next to me. What the heck am I doing to bodhicitta? No worries. Start small. Incorporate a thought, then maybe you will have a wish to develop this real great bodhicitta to benefit everybody. You neutralize it with a love and not think individual things because we are working on our minds too, right? Slowly and steadily, right? Any questions on the six preparatory practices? Everybody understands setting up an altar. What goes where? It's also in your readings. And if you don't know, in very simple way, left are your teachings, center is a deity or your gurus, right is a stupa or something like that. And your gurus can replace the deity or gurus, but in that way, Buddha Dharma Sangha. Okay. Seven limb prayers, very important to know. Seven limb, these are like your limbs. You, in order to support the body, you need your limbs. The tires are needed for the car. These are absolutely beautiful ways. You are seated now in your meditation at this point. So you mentally do prostrations. You make offerings. You've already done the offerings, but you can take them, make it big. Take something you really like and make it part of it. Even if you have one flower, make a garden out of it. Offering a little apple, make all the dishes you can think about. Okay? Expand it. Okay? And then, of course, when you confess, you are letting it out of your system. And you're hoping that you will remedy that. So that's why they say, declare all my negative activities. They use the word confession. Then don't forget to rejoice all the good things you do. Okay? If you were successful, you were generous, you kept your promise, you finished your daily practice 2 days in a row. Enjoy. Feel good about it. That's how you reinforce that with positive. Right? Request to stay. Ask in your mind for these teachers to stay. Okay, please stay with me. Teach me. Okay, requesting to teach, of course, demanding, requesting to stay, and then ultimately you dedicate that. And I use the word it harness. When it comes out of it and it goes out, it stays there for a long time. It's a wonderful release. Stay there. And I dedicate to everything. It also develops beautiful bodhicitta in my mind. Okay? We do mandala offerings. You can read these things up. I'm just going through it so you can understand. And you finally make requests. And we'll talk about a little request, making requests today. Okay? You already know this. Class 3, we talked about the graduated path, the meditation manual. Those are the 2 or 3 books that we talk about all the time. Right? How to meditate on Lamrim. And we talked about the 8 freedoms that we started with Lamrim. So we went with the lower scope to with the precious human rebirth. Right? Then we talked a little bit about death and impermanence. Right? And so 9-point death meditation. So we talked about the freedoms. And I have these slides if somebody feels they need it. I also have it in the book if they want to take a picture of it. So you don't have to know all of these things by heart. No way. If you know it, after a while you'll know them. But there are a few that are applicable. Just take 1 or 2 points and think about them. How lucky you are to have found Dharma. You have a good health. You can come here, drive here, walk here, use your cane, whatever the case, you're able to make it here and listen to Dharma. That's a great richness you have. How many people won't or can't? Right? You have support. We have friend circle here. We have a community here. You can usually find somebody who can sit down and introduce you to somebody or talk to you. That's a wonderful. Okay? Let's go to summary 4. We talked about protecting our mind. You know, we talked about the thought transformation, the 8 verses of thought transformation, and I will show you where it is again. We talked about the long-rimmed glasses. You know what we talked about? Remember that? So you're learning about precious human rebirth. Kind of put those goggles on, go to a grocery store, you see somebody who's really struggling or in a wheelchair or something, and think how precious life is, how short life can be. Be thankful you are not in that situation, how much that person, poor person may be suffering. So you can kind of take your practice and apply it. And so what you're doing is you're helping your mind remember some of these things, how precious my life is, and I can die anytime. Right? So it's just the way. So if you're learning refuge, if you're learning samsara, if you're learning emptiness, apply some of those meditation points as you're learning through the DB classes or reading Lamrim. Take one or two points, and maybe there are some points that just does not want to go in. Put them on and think about it. And then see if you can find real examples that is applicable to you, or you may be able to say, I can kind of sense that one. You know, work with it till you put it in your system. Ask, search, read, look at it, and then all of a sudden, it will start to gel. Then it's, when it's firm in you, you move on. Okay? Then other things we talked about, walking meditation, and I'm sure a lot of you did it or not. Remember the homework? I had asked you to go in your room, find a nice place, do a little walking meditation, and just think of how things are impermanent. So, anybody do that? Somebody had to do it. Okay. It's very important that you do. This is a very 5 to 10 minutes of your time to just walk and think about how everything is impermanent. If not, at least sit and think how your life is impermanent. Look at the pillows. Look at the house you have. Look at the car you have. Look at the TV. Anything you really like. Yeah. Take a look at something you really like and really look how permanent it is. Is it? You would benefit from thinking about that a lot. It will also prepare you to understand emptiness later. Okay? So just kind of think about that. Okay, we can do a self-evaluation. Some people keep notes, good things, bad things, black seeds, white seeds. I mean, they do all kinds of... These are just options to protect your mind. And what are you doing here? Is this something required to do? Nobody's asking you to do all of these things. These are some options. People have different ways of dealing with how. Because the minute you have a good mind, you go to something bad happens or you perceive it to be bad because you're not there yet, and all of a sudden, your mind is all gone. It switches off. It goes on that vacation trip of me, I hate it, I don't like it, this is ridiculous, right? Negative train starts. And Dharma is teaching you how to twist it, how to turn it, and these are tools. Anything that you like. Remember, we even talked about some people like tattoos, some people big posters, or anything that reminds you of something that says, I gotta change that thought into this. I had a wrong train started. I need to hop off and go on to the other train that I was on. Okay? So you gotta work on it on a daily basis. So that's what it's talking about. We talked about the lay vows already. We talked about the precepts. We talked about yoga of eating, very powerful. You eat all the time. You know how many times you take something and pop, it goes in the mouth. Just a nice practice to offer it. And think that everything, even for the short ones, you can put Oma, home, body, speech, and mind. Think it goes out, takes all the wisdom from this Buddhas, incorporates it, and it pours this beautiful nectar into your food. You offer it that to your guide, your teacher, and say, stay with me, keep me teaching. And then put, as if you're putting the nectar in your mouth, and it blesses every cell in your body, all the sentient beings in your body. even that popcorn can become really, really powerful. That potato chip can be very powerful, right? So that's the point. You're practicing. You're practicing. And if you did this yoga fiti, yoga of sleeping we talked about, you can do a couple of things. One of the things suggested, as I had said, is, you know, you see Buddha laying down like this. That's how he went to Parinirvana. And so they suggest that's an auspicious way. You lay down for a while and then think your head is in the lap of a Buddha. If you are practicing Tara, your head is in the Mother Tara's lap. You know, whatever your practice is, they're all emanations of Buddha. It's whatever your practice is, whatever you're drawn to. You put yourself in the lap of Buddha, of Mother Tara or Buddha, for example, and just say, let my sorrows pass away. Going to sleep, thinking about some good positive thoughts of nice things, and then when you wake up in the lap of Mother Tara or Guru Buddha. Just think of that for a while. You do your bodhicitta, do your practice, think about it, relax a little bit, let the mind think about positive things, do your normal activities, shower. It's a way to kind of keep this flowing in a good, easy way, but these are tools to keep your mind engaged in Dharma. And why engaged in Dharma? Because you are practicing to change your negative mind or I-oriented mind or attachment and clinging that we have for everything and all around things, to change that into something virtuous and develop bodhicitta. Why? So that we can eventually become Buddha. So with time left, I don't have a lot, but we'll cover something very important, and hopefully we'll have 15 minutes left for a nice meditation on Vajrasattva today. So today we're going to talk about accumulating merit. So now, why are we talking about this? These are activities to keep success in your practice going. Okay, there are three things they talk about. One is accumulating merit, purification practice, and heartfelt requests. We talked about requests earlier, but I'm going to talk a little bit more about requests. What is it all about? What are you requesting and where are you requesting? So it's important to understand what are you requesting, how are you requesting. And sometimes we think about our teachers requesting to a teacher. But not all of us are lucky to have a relationship with a teacher like the old traditional way where student and teacher were in front of each other. Right? Sometimes in today's world, teacher is coming and going. Sometimes there are people offline right now, streaming. They're not close to the teacher. So how do you make a request? What are you making a request to? So it's important. And while I'm digressing a little bit, the importance of having a teacher is all over Lamrim. One of the biggest contemplation when you talk about presenting the path is the importance of having a teacher. So then some of you may say, I don't have a teacher. I don't have a guru. So there's a couple of ways to think about it. You need to create a heartfelt request. So think about it. Have you had guides before, teachers before? Your parents taught you how to walk, how to eat. You went to high school, you had teachers. Right? Somebody's already guiding you. If you're sitting here today, somebody's guiding you in some way or form. Right? So sometimes we just don't recognize. So it's good to request heartfelt requests to have a teacher. It's very important to have that. Also, in some cases, those who don't have teachers, your teacher, so think of the word guru and yoga. We say guru yoga, it's required, do guru yoga, guru yoga. Guru is equal to lama. Guru is a Sanskrit word, lama is a Tibetan word. And lama means what? One full of heavy qualities, good qualities. One with good qualities. And yoga means a union. So, in essence, you're trying to reach that absolute nature of your mind also. You know, so you can even say, okay, I don't have a teacher, so you put Buddha or Mother Tara or whatever your deity is in front of it. You're making a very heartfelt request, but you're really reaching to your mind and saying, I truly wish you could teach me. I really heartfelt wish that I learned this. I wish that I become, give it to me. I want to learn this. You're asking for it. You're requesting it. You're begging. that you get this. That's the nature. You're really putting that in your mind, right? So even that helps when you're even talking to a teacher. You're literally saying, please teach me, please help me, right? So if you look at the foundations of all good qualities in your prayer book, you will see Lama Tsongkhapa, when he was writing that, he was begging Manjushri. He was full of yearning and begging Manjushri, and if you read it carefully, in every paragraph he says, please bless me, please bless me. If you open the prayer book right now, you'll see in every paragraph he says, bless me to get this, please bless me to get this. He was very heartfelt request was he was being made. We just read through it. Let me have the light, it's like a bubble, it can go anytime, so please bless me with it, thank you. Da 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 da, we go through that. But when you really pay attention to how it's being done, it was a heartfelt request. You're requesting your mind to be aligned with that enlightened. Its function is to create bliss and help others. And so you want to create that nature, you want to become enlightened, you make a heartfelt request so that you become that. So those are heartfelt requests. Don't underestimate. It's not like saying, I'm going to go out, I'm going to make an appointment, and hey, can I get this? It's more than that. It's a sincere effort. Okay? So that's why it's important. Accumulating merit. When you think that sometimes you feel like you just don't have energy. We all go through that. You just don't have energy. Sorry, I have to take a break. We do that. That means something is... You need a break, or you're missing something. There's low energy, maybe, and you need to create a momentum. You need to create a positive energy, so you get back into it again. And so there are many ways to do it. You know, you can be generous or do some offerings. You can serve in the center or some other ways, not necessarily here. You can help somebody. You can show love to your parents. Hey, you can give right to Geshe-la sometimes. And you will see that a simple activity from you'll find feeling this way for a couple of days. Why? It is just the nature of positive energy. You do activities. Think about our venerable nuns. We have kind of run out of karmas, for some of us may not have the money, but even $1 can help. Greeting somebody at the door can help. Being kind to somebody in a restaurant can help. Simply a phone call to your mother or father or child with a loving tone can be a good help. Anything that energizes you back into that normal, positive side. Sometimes you just get dull. Simple. Right? So many ways to generate and accumulate merit. Okay? So let's talk about purification. Okay? So when you think that you're reading Lam Rim and you're doing all these practices, sometimes the words just don't go in. Okay? They're just not penetrating. Sometimes you visualize and nothing comes. And typically it means that sometimes some sort of purification is important. And remember, when we talk about purification, a lot of people think, we will say things like, okay, think about something that you may have done bad. And then some people say, I can't think of anything. Right? That happens. So we're not talking about just yesterday and today or this life. You have eons of lifetimes. Think about when you talk in a meeting, you'll say the same thing and another person says the same thing, they listen to them, not to you. Why? Because maybe somewhere in some past life, you may have played that role and you didn't give importance to somebody or did not hear properly or not listen. How many times you lose things and it didn't get stolen, and months later it shows up again. Maybe in some lifetime, you could have borrowed some things and you were not diligent in giving it back on time. Maybe something like that. We've all killed somebody somewhere in our eons of life. So, or you can think about the non-virtuous actions in the karma of killing and stealing. You can think of that in all these lifetimes, something like that may have happened. Maybe you are having illness. Why? Karma is not a punishment. Western people have a tendency to think, I did something terrible, horrible. It is like a law of gravity. It's simply a result of what you did. It doesn't come with a lot of the butter and sugar on it. It's simply a result of something you did, action, cause, result. It just goes on. And you have a way to diminish it, to get it rid of some of these things. And you don't know when something, of what residue you might have left, that it's coming, it has a fruition at some point in life. So once you understand that, just, that's why we say, don't feel guilty. Just regret and move on. Find a remedy and do something about it. Do an antidote. Say sorry to somebody. Make sure we put things back on time. Let's not steal. Right? And there's a good example given in here that even though we are working and practicing, sometimes we are creating this ignorant mindset at all times, karmic activities, I call it. So there's an example. You go to a donut place and you think, oh, I'm going to have a donut. I earned the money. I have it in my pocket. I'm going to buy this one and that one and that one. So you are thinking, I earned it. I have the donut. I can have the donut. And if somebody comes in front of you or somebody standing in line and takes that last donut that you want, you might even think, oh, man, yeah. Maybe I hope he doesn't get that one, you know. And immediately our mind is already self-serving. Did we instead think, if you were truly in Dharma, think, it's such a pleasure, I must have a good karma to be able to even afford to have a beautiful donut. It is a pleasure that somebody else has a good karma to have that donut. We don't turn that. It's a very hard for us. Because that's our nature that we've habituated thinking. So think about those things. So when you purify, you can purify those things. You're always working towards changing your mind and purifying so you can reach the positive side in your mind in a good way, in an easy way, in a fun way. This is not a constraint, oh, you do this, you're going to have this. But think about those things as you pass, go through your day. So with that, there are two major things that we talk about in terms of purification practices. One is the confession to 35 Buddhas. And one is Vajrasattva. Okay? Both considered absolutely powerful, and it's been emphasized throughout the lineage. And Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Lama Yeshe, immediately when people started to come to practice, or they join, or become some sort of a disciple, or whatever it is, they immediately gave them Vajrasattva to do, or 35 confession buddhas. Very powerful. So I have something that I wanted to share with you about them, and then we'll do our meditation. We have some time now. I caught up onto that. So let me explain to you about 35 Confession Buddha in short. Okay? That's the tanka of confession to 35 Buddhas. You see the five Buddhas, one on the top, second row, third row, for their same type of Buddhas, the first one. So these are what they call the five Buddha families. So the question comes, what does that mean? So let me tell you, according to Lama Zopa Rinpoche, each of the five types represent a different aspect of enlightenment. Okay? There is a lot more to this, but rather than going into a lot of details, I can even tell you they also represent your aggregates. This is a new word for some of you. This is what makes a sentient being. This is how we are who we are. What are the five aggregates? Karen?
I never think in terms of that. I always think in terms of my senses
instead. So let's talk about them. What is the first one?
Form?
Form?
I don't know.
Form? Second one, feeling or sensations. Third one is discrimination or perception. Okay? Then mental activities, the attitude we create from all these thoughts. Right? And what is the last one? Consciousness, our mind. This is what kind of puts us together. Our form, things we sense, ear, nose, throat and taste and all that, feelings, perceptions, good, bad, ugly, long, tall, all that happens in our mind. Right? And then we formulate some attitudes or categorize things in a certain way. Create attitudes, I like it, I don't like it, if I do this, that will happen. That starts happening. And then of course awareness of our mind, internal and outer, external. So those are called the five aggregates. So a lot of these five Buddha families are sometimes, not sometimes, they're associated with those five aggregates. They're associated with other things too, but I'm just saying, if you put it together, when you learn about mind and its potential, you will learn a lot about the five aggregates also, okay? So, when you are purifying, now think about enlightenment. Each of those Buddha is an enlightenment of that particular, a certain aggregate. That means these are the qualities of Buddhas, completely enlightened beings. The sensations are pure, the form is pure, the consciousness is pure. So these are the aspects or different aspect of enlightenment. You follow that? Am I confusing anybody? Just know right now, if enlightenment is the ultimate nature of Buddha, these are the five aspects of enlightenment. Okay. Each of those Buddhas you see in their rows, when they were bodhisattvas and becoming Buddha, promised, they did so many prayers, and they say, whoever does this practice, all this karma and hindrances and obscurations will be taken away, will be purified. So, not only that, when you do prostrations, a lot of things happen in your body, your chakras, your wind channels. They all get aligned too. They get energized. Okay? So there's a couple of things. A lot of people think, I can't do... Lama Zopa Rinpoche goes through this mantra so quickly, you can never do one for every name. So they're saying, not to worry. If you can do it, great. But if you can't do it, go through it. Do the best you can. But you keep saying the mantras and you keep bowing down. Eventually, you will get to a point that you will synchronize. But very powerful practice of purification. All of these practices start with the four opponent powers. You familiar with four opponent powers? Four opponent powers are the powers. So first is there's a regret of what you've done. Reliance or regret, they go up and down depending on how you want to phrase it. Then you rely on the triple gem of our dharma, practice, teachings, right? Then you remedy. You can remedy by doing antidotes. If you've stolen something, you want to give it back. If you were harsh, maybe you want to say sorry. Whatever, you practice these things. But you think about this in your mind. And at the end, you want to have a resolve. You want to say for next day, for next hour, for next 2 days, or ever. Whatever your capacity is, I will not do it again. Done very sincerely. If you can't do it, take it for a short period. But you must have something that you want to purify in front of you. Apply the four opponent powers and then do the purification with that in mind to this Buddha and saying, please purify that. And it will go. Follow? Another very powerful one. In just about every readings you'll see, there is a 100-syllable Vajrasattva. Right, is a purification practice. We will do that in about 5 minutes. Okay. So, any questions? Did I confuse anybody with the prostrations or 35? It is sometimes hard to explain it. You must just kind of take a look at it. Again, I'm not advertising any books or anything like that, but I invested in these small books. It's a preliminary practice to 35 Confession Buddha. It tells you the prerequisite. It goes you through refuge, bodhicitta, invocation, the 7 limb prayers, and then how you prepare to do it, and what is the premeditation. You do the practice, and then how you confess. Full practices in there. It tells you every name, and I even have taped it. I even have it on my iPad. So if you want to hear it, sometimes I hear them, and you can bow down. Okay? So it's a wonderful practice. Remember in our teachings from Lama Zopa Rinpoche, for some people it may be a wonderful thing to do in the morning and then do Vajrasattva in the evening. Okay? But there are books you can read. It will explain you what it is. It will explain you better than I did in terms of the five Buddha families. You just need to know that you see Buddha, you see the Chenrezig in the heart, and you see these five aspects of enlightenment of the Buddha. And you go through each one of them, and there are names for every Buddha in there. At the end, there is Medicine Buddha, and bottom, there's also Tara. that really is a very powerful practice also. Okay? If you're wondering, I didn't do 35 prostrations, not necessary, but if you can do it, wonderful. It helps you even more. But if you can do as much as you can, wonderful. For some people, they can't do it, they bow in their mind. But it is still a great practice. Vajrasattva, let's talk about Vajrasattva now. Talk about heartfelt request, accumulating merit, purification practices. We talked about the prostrations. There are also other practices one can do. You can study emptiness, some other prostrations, Vajrasattva, mandala offerings, guru yoga. These are all ways to purify yourself. Even do Dorji Khadro, remember? Purification practice. Okay, there are some requirements for DD people and for teachers and so forth. 100,000 is a very normal. Lama Zopa Rinpoche will not hesitate to say if you're a 3-month retreat to say do 400,000. Okay. So some people do it partially and then they continue over the next 2-3 years. Some people are able to do it and some people have been doing it and they complete it. So all options are available, but it's good to know. So, before you do Vajrasattva, I thought it would be very nice to know the meaning of Vajrasattva mantra. So let's go through that. It's a 100-syllable mantra, and what you're doing is, there's a very beautiful visualization, okay? And you're really, again, you have to go through the four opponent powers, and then you visualize Vajrasattva, there are different ways of visualizing Vajrasattvas, depending on if you have received initiation, and what you can do with it. You can visualize either way, but at some point, you just make sure it melts into your system, in your body. But anyways, let's take a look at the Vajrasattva meaning. So what does it mean? So everybody knows Vajrasattva mantra, or they have to read it? They have to read it, right? It is on page 64 of the prayer book. It's the 100-syllable mantra. I believe, I may be wrong. I usually go there. If it is, yeah, it is. Page 64, in bottom left. So, when you're saying this mantra, in essence what you're saying is, O great being, whose holy mind is indestructible nature of all the Buddhas, having destroyed every obscuration, attained all realizations, and passed beyond all sufferings, you have attained the realizations of things just as they are. Do not forsake me. Please bring me closer to your Vajra holy mind and grant me the ability to realize the ultimate nature of phenomena. Please help me to realize the great bliss. Lead me to your state and grant me all powerful attainments. Please bestow upon me all virtuous actions and glorious qualities. Okay? So once you know this and you start to understand the meaning, and when you do it with sincerity, it's mind-blowing. Okay? My words. So we're going to do the meditation. Also know that there's a long version and a short version. Have you seen those small booklets out there? That's a short version you can do every day. Okay? Just as an FYI. Okay. So again, just sit in with a proper position, keeping your spine straight, relaxed. Arms are rounded, relaxed, shoulders are relaxed, head slightly tilted, and mouth and jaw are relaxed. Take a few deep breaths in and out. Allowing the body and mind to be completely present. and setting the motivation for this practice. Reflecting on our precious human life, the opportunity that we have found now and that we've met the teachings, and the wish to take advantage of this chance as much as possible before we die. Thinking of those in our lives that we know directly or indirectly that we want to help in some way. Acknowledging that place within our hearts that truly wishes to develop to awaken our qualities of wisdom, compassion, and ability to help others. How wonderful it would be to free all belief. How wonderful it would be to be free of all belief in self-concept. Free of the prison of the contracted self. And recognizing that even though we might have a great wish to develop realizations in our minds, our mind just feels very dull, blocked, unable to see or understand. Feeling the great burden of the mountains of negativities, misknowing reality, and acting out in ignorance that have been imprinted in our mind stream, cluttering up of wisdom, counteracting our compassion, and blocking our ability. So wanting to be free of all these blocks, all these mental veils, all these negative habit patterns, and to be free to act in beneficial ways to ourselves and others. So with this wish, we do the practice of Vajrasattva. This is the preliminary visualization. Visualize in the space before us Vajrasattva, father and mother. The union of wisdom and method or compassion. Representing the perfect union of our mind with enlightenment. Perfect purity, radiating white light. And visualizing ourselves surrounded by all living beings, our father on the right side, our mother on the left, enemies and those beings who agitate us in the space before us, and friends just behind us. And with a wish that all of us would quickly find perfect happiness and taking responsibility to bring that about. With a deep wish to free our mind of all that which prevents us from actualizing the path quickly, we recite together the verse of taking refuge. I will say it, you just listen to the words. I forever take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And all the three vehicles. In the Dakinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and the heroines, in the empowering goddesses and the bodhisattvas, but most of all, I take refuge in my holy guru forever. I will say it one more time. I forever take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And in all the three vehicles, in the Dakinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and the heroines, in the empowering goddesses and the bodhisattvas. But most of all, I take refuge in my holy guru forever. Then meditating on the power of regret, especially calling to the mind specific actions of our body, speech and mind, which only serve to bring about more suffering for ourselves and others. Realizing that the definition of negative karma is any action which results in suffering, any action motivated by ignorance, ignorant liking of things, and ignorant disliking of things, not understanding the real causes of our experience. Almost every action I do, 24 hours a day, is motivated by worldly concern, attachment to the comfort of this life. It is like this from birth to death in this life and has been like that for beginless rebirth. Nearly every action I have ever created has been non-virtuous, the cause of suffering. Not only that, but continuously I have also been breaking my vows, pratimoksha vows, bodhisattva vows, and tantric vows. Worst of all, I have created the heaviest of negative karmas in relation to my virtuous friends, getting angry at them, generating wrong views, having non-devotional thoughts towards them, harming their holy body, and disobeying their advice. Having this negative imprint on my mental continuum is unbearable. It's as if I've swallowed a lethal poison. I must practice the antidote right away and purify all this negative karma immediately, without a second's delay. In this way, bring to your mind specific actions that we know are not in alignment with our spiritual of enlightenment or spirit of enlightenment. And now, generating a great regret and a strong sense of urgency to wash this away from our mind stream. Not wanting even the slightest residue of this imprint. Then remembering impermanence and death. Many people my age or younger have died. It's a miracle that I'm still alive and have this incredible opportunity to purify my negative karma. Death is certain, but its time is most uncertain. If I were to die right now, I would definitely be born in the lower realms. Because I could not practice Dharma there, I would remain in the lower realms for countless eons. Therefore, how unbelievably fortunate I am to to be able to purify my negative karma right now without a second's delay and by practicing the Vajrasattva meditation recitation. So we are generating bodhicitta now. But I'm not practicing this Vajrasattva purification for myself alone. The purpose of my life is to release all hell beings, pretas, animals, humans, asuras, suras, and intermediate state beings from their suffering and its causes, and lead them to unsurpassed enlightenment. In order to do this, I must first reach enlightenment myself. Therefore, I must purify all my negative karma immediately by practicing the Vajrasattva meditation recitation. So very strongly, generating in your mind stream this wish to just be free of all negativity, all karmic blocks, all negative habit patterns that we have created in our minds in this life. And also in the lives without beginning, not even knowing what kind of darkness are still obscuring our mind. Then visualize above the crown of your head, seated upon a lotus and the moon seat, are Vajrasattva father and mother. Their bodies are white. Each has one face and two arms. He holds a dorje and a bell. She a curved knife and a skull cap. They are embracing each other. The father is adorned with 6 mudras, the mother with 5. He sits in a vajra posture, she in the lotus. Vajrasattva is my root guru, the holy mind of all Buddhas, the Dharmakaya, the absolute nature of Buddha, who out of his unbearable compassion, which embraces me and all other sentient beings, appears in this form to purify me and all others. In this way, your mind is now transformed into guru devotion, the root of all blessings and realizations of the path to the enlightenment. On a moon disk at Vajrasattva's heart stands HUM, encircled by a garland of 100-syllable mantra. A powerful stream of white nectar flows from the HUM and the mantra garland, and I am cleansed of all sicknesses, spirit harm, negative karma, and obscuration. I will say this mantra. You can, if you know it, you can repeat it, or you can read it if you want to. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Tenopatita Drido Me Bhava Sutosho Me Bhava Suposho Me Bhava Anurakto Me Bhava Sarva Siddhi Me Prayacha Sarva Karma Sucha Me Chittam Shriyam Kurum Hum Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sarva Tata Gata Vajre Mame Muncha Vajre Bhava Maha Samaya Sattva Ahum Pe. Typically, this mantra is done 3, 7, or 21 times. Visualize a final purifying stream of white nectar and light pour forth from Vajrasattva's holy body and mind. And like a very, very strong shower, completely cleanses from our mind and body every single negativity, every single mental veil. This wash away completely through the soles of our feet, enter a crack in the earth, and are consumed by the Lord of Death amidst a blazing fire. Completely cleansed. So the Lord of the Death, he becomes completely satiated. His mouth is sealed with double dorje. He turns and walks away. The crack in the earth is healed, and our body and mind are completely calm and clear like crystal. From the crown of my head, Guru Vajrasattva says, child of the race, your negativities, obscurations, and the broken and damaged pledges have been completely purified. Now generate a strong faith that all is completely purified, just as Guru Vajrasattva has said. And create the power of restraint, refraining from creating negative activities again. Before Guru Vajrasattva, I vow never again to commit those negative actions from which I can easily abstain, and not to commit for a day, an hour, or at least few seconds those negative actions from which I find it difficult to abstain. Guru Vajrasattva is extremely pleased with your pledge. Vajrasattva, mother and father, melt into the light and dissolve into you. Your body, speech and mind become inseparably one with Guru Vajrasattva's holy body, speech and mind. Then with this awareness that there is no negative action, with the subject alone, no negative action, with the object, no negative action, and it's impossible to engage in action without subject and object, with this awareness, then we dedicate the merits. Due to all these merits of the three times collected by all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and myself and all the sentient beings which appear to be real from their own side but which are empty, may I, who appear to be real but is empty, achieve Guru Vajrasattva's enlightenment which appears to be real but is empty, and lead all sentient beings who appear to be real but are empty, to the enlightenment which appears to be real but is empty, by myself alone, who appears to be real but also is totally empty, non-existent from my own side. May the precious Bodhicitta, the source of all happiness and success for myself and all other sentient beings, be generated with my own mind and in the minds of all sentient beings without even a second's delay. And may that which has been generated be increased. May I and all other sentient beings have Lama Tsongkhapa as our direct guru in all of our lifetimes, never be separated even a second from the pure path that is greatly praised by the conqueror Buddhas, and actualize the complete path, the three principal paths, and the two stages of the highest Yoga Tantra, the root of which is Guru devotion, within our minds as quickly as possible. I dedicate all these virtues in the best way so that I may follow Prem Manjushri and Samatha Bhadras, who realize things as they are. And whatever dedication the three-time victorious ones gone to bliss have admired as best, in the same way, I also perfectly dedicate all these roots of virtue so that I may perform good works. Thank you. Okay. It is 8:35. I've taken 5 more minutes of your time. I would like you to, when you go home, if you haven't done walking meditation, do it for 5 minutes. Think about these things what we talked about today. Think about creating merits, how to purify, establishing daily practice, why are you doing it, what is your journey, where are you with it, and the lambrim. Think of these things. Okay, I'm not asking for a lot, and if you are serious, you should be reading some of those materials that is required for this module. It will help you a lot. But you can purify every single day. It's a short Vajrasattva booklet. It's a very short one. And if you do some Vajrasattva mantra and first develop those 4 opponent powers, think of something and then purify it. It's amazing how it works. I did not repeat the mantra more than once today. Typically you do at least 3 to 7 times, but I also realize the time was passing by. But I hope you understand the meaning of it and why you purify. That is the main thing. Thank you.